Hello and welcome to the EMS On Air podcast. The mission of this podcast is to keep healthcare providers safe, informed, and prepared. Today is February 11, 2021. This episode was recorded on February 8. I'm Jeff Lassers and I'll be your host. Even though we are located in Southeast Michigan and we mention our home state a lot, today's content applies to EMS on the national and even the global scale. This episode is yet another COVID vaccine update from our resident experts, Dr. Steve McGraw and Russell Faust. My friends, Steve and Russ are both considered experts in their respective fields, and they're back to give us an update, as well as answer recent questions from the EMS and hospital communities. Most importantly, all of their answers are based in the latest scientific data and literature that clearly demonstrates the safety profile of the COVID vaccines that are currently available. Today's list of questions is in the episode description. Dr. Russell Faust is the medical director of Oakland County Health, located in Pontiac, Michigan. Dr. Steve McGraw is an ED physician at Ascension Providence Hospitals in both Southfield and Novi, Michigan, as well as the EMS medical director of the Oakland County Medical Control Authority, which provides oversight to 50 EMS agencies. Together, these guys have been a major part of EMS's understanding and response throughout the entire COVID-19 pandemic. Even though these guys do a great job of answering every question they could think of, I'm sure there's more good ones out there. So please keep emailing your questions, comments, feedback, and episode ideas to the EMS On Air podcast team by email at qi@ocmca.org. Also, check out our website, emsonair.com, for the latest information, podcast episodes, and other details. Follow us on Instagram at emsonair. And please, whatever podcast platform you use, subscribe to our podcast and leave us a rating and a review. It really helps us to grow this podcast. Good morning, everybody. How are we?
Hey, good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Jeff. How are you?
I'm fantastic.
Excellent.
Cool. All right, guys, we're going to get to the down and dirty today. Today is an update regarding the COVID vaccines that are available. It doesn't sound like the mass hysteria of zombies has happened yet, but I've seen 28 days later, and I've only got mine a couple weeks ago, so you never know. So Drs. Russell Faust and Steve McGraw, would you mind giving us an update for the EMS-related healthcare communities about the COVID vaccine?
You know, I'll just start by saying that I think we're starting to see a little differentiation across the state. I think we're finding that some agencies and personnel are having more opportunity, and in others, the opportunity has been a little more difficult. Certainly, those that adopted early to obtain it, I'm thankful for that. But we have a lot yet to go, and we certainly need to support them. It isn't just using their own public health agencies or their local health system agencies, or private providers, or even when we get it in these retail pharmacies. The answer is going to essentially be, I think, all of the above. For those that didn't elect to obtain the initial vaccines when they were 1A and we weren't vaccinating anyone else, it's okay. If you were hesitant then and you're not now, that's wonderful. We've got to get you to consider all opportunities, get your name on a waiting list, get your name on the radar for public health, for the retail pharmacy near you, to your health system near you, maybe even your own private family medicine provider. Make sure that they understand you're a 1A candidate and absolutely get vaccinated as soon as possible.
Let me emphasize that. If anyone is offered the vaccine, go for it. It doesn't matter which vaccine it is. I'm actually hearing a little bit of what I consider odd preference for certain vaccines, one over the other. People will be called and say, you know, we'd like you to come in. We've got a vaccine clinic. Your name came up. Come on in and get the shot. And they're like, well, is it Pfizer or is it Moderna? Or, you know, they're like hesitant. I'm like, what the hell are you thinking? You need to get vaccinated. It doesn't matter. And, you know, when the Johnson & Johnson, the Janssen vaccine is available, people are hearing it's only 60% effective. Oh, my God, you know, it's 100% effective in preventing fatality and hospitalization. That's what really matters. When you get the call, when anybody offers you the vaccine, regardless of the brand or flavor, get vaccinated. Please just get vaccinated. We all need to be vaccinated as soon as possible.
Hear, hear. That's a great point, Dr. Faust. I will also second that. I think that we almost became a little unrealistic in when we saw that it was 95 when the Moderna and Pfizer were 90%+ effective. We lost track of the fact that in the past, that has not been typical of the vaccines developed, and they're still very effective. 60% preventing all disease and 100% preventing hospitalizations and fatal illness is a phenomenal success. and very, very meaningful to the people that get it. And to somehow suggest that it's, well, not quite as great as some other vaccine is missing the point entirely. Thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah, we need that. And, you know, that will put an end to this pandemic. We need to get everybody vaccinated. So if it passes FDA muster and you're offered a vaccine, I don't care what flavor it is. You got to do it.
I totally agree. And what seems to be affecting people again is the new streams that they select and how much they watch it. And I'm not saying you pick one flavor of it, but when you get intensity into one direction all the time, you're going to have an opinion about a vaccine and you probably don't have a scientific background to make that opinion for yourself. I know I don't. So I consulted my personal physician and I talked to both of these gentlemen who gave me, go get the vaccine. Before anybody makes a decision on whether they shouldn't get the vaccine or what flavor or brand or whatever else is out there, you should probably talk to your doctor before you make that definitive decision and turn down a vaccine. That's probably a good recommendation.
Jeff, I can think of very few conditions where I would recommend somebody not getting this vaccine. It's an extremely unusual recommendation. I've heard people say, well, I take chronic steroids, get the vaccine. I have rheumatoid arthritis, get the vaccine. I have to take Plaquenil, get the vaccine. I've had women saying that they're satisfied that their baby was delivered healthy, but they're still breastfeeding. American College of Obstetrician Gynecologists says, get the vaccine. I can't even really think off the top of my head any significant group of people with an underlying health condition that I would recommend against it. If you are undergoing chemotherapy or you have immunosuppressive drugs for an organ transplant, I think talking it over with your physician is a good idea. In almost every case, they're going to tell you to still get the vaccine. Now, right. One of the things that is true is certain medications may make in your individual biology the vaccine somewhat less likely to induce the full immunoresponse, but it doesn't mean it's not worth trying. It's still worth getting in the vast majority of cases. Dr. Faust?
Yeah, folks with cancer, folks on immunosuppressive therapy, folks with HIV, folks with these designer immunomodulator drugs, everybody should be getting vaccinated. The pharmaceutical companies and FDA and CDC have basically cautioned people who are, for example, pregnant to check with their obstetrician, et cetera. But in fact, as Steve points out, ACOG, American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, has said, no. This is a risk-benefit balance consideration. And the benefits of being vaccinated and not getting COVID infected far outweigh any risks of the vaccine and the risk of being COVID infected and those effects on a pregnancy and a fetus. So I'd certainly listen to ACOG before I listen to CDC or FDA. Let me just say a couple things about reactions and what happens at county health. We've been seeing a fair number of reactions. Primarily, we're seeing anxiety. So people who are having kind of mini anxiety attacks, becoming a little vasovagal, perhaps passing out after their vaccination, et cetera. Those are not contraindications for a second dose. The things that concern me are the kind of anaphylaxis prodrome constellation of symptoms. Things like tongue swelling, throat swelling, mouth tingling, lip tingling or swelling, jaw tightness, anything facial perioral. Those things concern me. And for every one of those, we've either managed them with a dose of Benadryl at the site or even EpiPen at the site, depending on severity, and basically monitoring them for quite a while. I had a lady on Saturday who clearly had an anaphylactic kind of prodrome, and I just sat there with an EpiPen in my pocket for about an hour next to her, and she didn't advance, she didn't progress. She continued to swallow. I gave her a Benadryl. She was swallowing okay, breathing okay. I hung on to her for 2.5 hours and then finally released her to home. With all of these people, we had originally been telling them to see their medical provider to follow up for second dose. And universally, all those medical providers shrugged their shoulders and said, I think you're fine. Go back to county health. County health is not the place for a second dose for these folks. That is not the place you want to be if you're going to have a true anaphylactic reaction. You don't want to be at Novi Showplace. You don't want to be in a drive-through site out in the parking lot sitting in your car if you're going to be in full anaphylaxis and having me have to do something about it. I don't want to be doing a slash trach in somebody's car in a parking lot. What we tell them now is, congratulations, you got a dose, you survived your dose. You might have as high as an 80 or more percent effect from this single dose. And if you get a second dose, we recommend that it be in a hospital or an emergency department, depending on what you can arrange with your system and provider. But at this point, at this time, we advise you to delay or postpone your second dose indefinitely until CDC and FDA can figure more out, until we know more. I can tell you universally, the four healthcare systems here in county, when those people call or arrive and request their second dose under monitor conditions, universally, their policy is we don't provide second dose to somebody who got their first dose elsewhere. So that's where we are.
Fair enough.
You know, I think it's safety first too, Dr. Faust, and you're right. The risk benefit of that second dose really tips towards too much risk if they have what you described, you know, these genuine airway or prodromal airways type symptoms. And I'm like you, I think we should back up and say 80%+ protection with that first shot in that case is yep. probably what we can
do. We should talk a little bit about that. You know, what is the coverage from a single dose of Pfizer or Moderna? In fact, it depends on how you measure it and when you measure it. And you're going to see or hear reports all over the internet, anywhere from 30% to 80% or 90% from a single dose. And in fact, it depends on how you measure it and when you measure it. And if you're measuring, as they did in the clinical trials, the risk of being infected, COVID infected versus placebo, that's one thing. If you're measuring actual antibody titers in the bloodstream, that's another. And if you measure too early, everything's going to be low. If you're going to measure an effect of, say, keeping you out of the hospital or keeping you alive, then a single dose is greater than 80%, possibly 90% or higher, especially if you're going to look at it out 3, 4, 5 weeks out after the dose. Anyway, for those folks, again, I totally agree. Safety first.
Okay. So that's a great clean answer of if anybody has a reaction to their first vaccination, don't get the second. But guess what? You still have plenty of protection. You just don't have as much. But since you already had that potential issue of a reaction, we don't want to stimulate that to go further and have your throat swell up into a location that's not an ER, right? So that's a very good way to put that. So if you're encountering any patients that have had a reaction previously, at least as an EMS provider listening to this now, you can then convey that to the patient and say, well, you still have a lot of protections with this vaccine, even only having one dose.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just want to distinguish what we were describing, these, you know, potential true airway anaphylaxis, angioedema type responses versus what I mean, 99% or more of the reactions, you know, quote reactions I see are just manifestations of the immune response. The sore arm, the chills, body aches, some diarrhea or vomiting the next day.
And we expect those. And those are reassuring, right? I mean, it's your immune system kicking in. We want to see that.
Yeah. That means you got a shot and your body recognized the antigen and it's producing all the immune reactivity that we intend for you to have. That's not, however, a reason not to get the second dose for those people. And by the way, no one likes to be uncomfortable, but it is self-limited. People generally feel better on the second or third day. And as much as it's unfortunate to be uncomfortable, what I remind them is that this is infinitely better than the natural disease. So in those cases, I actually do recommend that they obtain their second dose on schedule as planned with almost no exception. But that's different. Those are the 99% of the reactions that we all get. What we were just describing, however, those true angioedema, anaphylaxis, life-threatening reactions, those are the ones where I think we would all agree it's not worth the risk of a second shot.
Yeah, and as EMS providers, we are trained to identify that systemic reaction, that life-threatening, allergic, anaphylactic reaction versus I'm having a slight reaction to my body adjusting to this vaccine that just went inside of me and my body is going to have a slight reaction. I experienced just a little bit of arm soreness. That was it. I had, I don't know, maybe a little tired. Could have been that I have a 2-year-old and a pregnant wife and I'm just tired. But then my second dose, my crew and I, that we went to get our vaccines and nobody felt anything after that. So let's transition this. I got a question. Are patients still delaying their care because of fear of the virus at the hospital? You know, originally we were seeing a lot of people not go to the hospital for chest pain even because they were so scared of this virus. And that probably translated into people having poor outcomes because they just weren't getting help. Where are we now with those types of numbers and situations?
You know, Jeff, I think this is a delayed reaction to community spread. And I remember back in the early summer when we really saw a spike in those that were not activating the 911 system or even transporting themselves to the hospital for things like chest pain, stroke, overwhelming sepsis, even fractures. I mean, I had people trying to MacGyver a splint for a fractured ankle for 4 days before they agreed. And fundamentally, in each of those cases, the fear of coming to the hospital with what they saw in the media looks so daunting. When we tell them there's no visitors, it just kind of re-cements in their mind, a hospital is an unsafe place to be if you have a non-COVID type complaint. When in truth, that's not at all accurate. We've become, in virtually every health system around here, very capable in identifying those who have COVID symptoms, treating them appropriately, but also segregating them within our building away from those that don't have COVID symptoms and treating those without COVID symptoms very effectively and safely. If you need your gallbladder removed, we're going to assess you, if necessary, operate on you and discharge you. And at no point will you be exposed to other people that are likely to give you COVID. The COVID patients are in a separate area with private rooms, the nursing staff and physician staff taking care of them. We can decontaminate ourselves before we go and see anybody that is non-COVID complaining. And what I worry about is I'm just like we saw in the early summer, I'm starting to see again now in the middle of the winter, what I suspect is a sort of a hangover effect from the fall. Once again, we disallowed visitors. Once again, the message I think intentionally or unintentionally maybe got to them that hospitals are, quote, full of COVID, unquote, and therefore by virtue of that, unsafe. And that is not the case. In fact, we were fine in the early summer. We're even better now. We have even more opportunity in private rooms to keep people away from one another. And I just don't want people to delay their care. Things like chest pain, stroke symptoms, irregular heartbeat or fainting, these are things that are potentially life-threatening. If you don't seek help for them or for moderate trauma, the outcome with delaying that treatment can be life-altering or even in life-ending. So, and this is where I would really love to have the partnership and help of our EMS providers. If you are assessing a patient who activated the 911 system and they clearly appear that they need medical attention, you know this from your experience, but they're reluctant, I would like you to feel very safe in saying to that patient, we'll take you to the hospital because they're going to ensure that you're treated safely and not in any way contaminated with COVID while you're there. We're in the building all the time and we see how they segregate people. We'll be safe and you'll be safe with us if you're willing to go. Those kinds of unsolicited and helpful comments would go a long way towards, I think, getting people the comfort they need to accompany you to the hospital.
So bottom line, if you're having a medical emergency, there's literally no emergency that could be going on with you that you shouldn't seek help because of the virus.
That's really true.
I mean, that's what it boils down to, right? I mean, your fear is not data that is supporting a potential life-threatening situation.
Yeah, I have a case from last Wednesday, a woman that came in at 6 a.m. She'd been having really sounded classically like angina for over 12 hours. And she was becoming short of breath and breaking out in a sweat. And the pain was becoming much more severe. And having had a history of a family member with a very similar type of cluster of complaints and findings, knew that this was likely from her heart. When I asked her at 6 a.m. why she didn't come in, you know, anytime after 9 o'clock, when these were becoming more profound, she said, and I quote, "I was afraid that if I came here, I would survive my heart problem, but die of COVID," unquote. And now, obviously, dealing with an ST elevation MI, I'm not really going to take the opportunity to tell her why that was a mistake. The point is she had finally presented and now we had an opportunity to help her. But I'm not kidding myself. I know that there's a good chance that others faced with the same circumstance elected not to come to the hospital at all and have had negative outcomes. So this is where we need to find people and reassure them wherever they are and let them know that they're going to be in good hands. And that delaying can make problems significantly worse instead of better. We can intervene. We can take clots out of brains. We can open up arteries to the heart. We can resuscitate people, set their fractures, give them antibiotics, treat their pneumonia. We can do a lot of things for people, but only if they come to us. It's really hard to do meaningful physical interventions just over the phone. And we tell people when they call, and they do, absolutely will keep you safe. Come to the hospital with that concern. Even a telehealth call doesn't get your artery open. If you come in, we can do a lot more for you than what we can advise you over the phone.
Bottom line, EMS can reassure them.
So we're talking about patients that might be fearful of the disease, fearful of the virus, and not going to the hospital. And on the other side of the spectrum, we have people that want to get tested all the time. And the word rapid test tells me, ooh, I can get tested very quickly. So I'm going to present a situation for you to set the stage here, because I want to talk about some rapid tests and getting tested real quick, because we're getting a lot of questions from the field about the place of rapid tests. So let's say an EMS provider has a direct exposure to a COVID positive patient and they weren't wearing a mask. This could have been on duty. This could have been off duty. Let's say they're at their mom's house. Turns out their mom had COVID and they were just sitting there chatting with them. They've now had a direct exposure. When should that EMS provider get tested? Should they get the rapid test? Give me some background here on what the proper procedure is, because we have EMS providers calling us saying, hey, my employer is saying I have to go get a rapid test, but I keep hearing the rapid tests are inaccurate, especially when I'm asymptomatic. Clear this up for us.
You know, I'm going to let Dr. McGraw rant about this, because I think he'll rant at a level just below my rant, because I have nothing good to say about rapid antigen testing.
I appreciate that, because like you, I'm pretty disappointed. And these are being directly marketed to our citizens as well, which, you know, adds to a level of confusion. Fundamentally, like most things that I have to answer in regards to COVID, you know, I start the answer with, it depends. If you're somebody who's had a known exposure and have no symptoms, there's a reason why we in the CDC recommend at least a 5 to 7 day delay where you protect others around you, quarantine as you should, but don't obtain testing immediately. And for the simple reason that if you've got an exposure and have no symptoms, your pre-test predictability is relatively low. And that's unfortunately magnified by a test that has a low sensitivity in such an environment like that. It's a little bit wonkish to get into some of the statistical reasoning for that. But suffice to say, if you don't have a high likelihood of a positive test, taking a test that has a low likelihood of reflecting a positive test, a true positive, anyway, sort of they multiply each other into a very inaccurate result. And I say that because one of the hesitations I have is people that enter into a situation where they have a low pretest predictability and do a low sensitivity test are highly likely to have a negative test regardless of their actual biologic state. The worst part of that is they could be falsely reassured. Well, the test said I'm negative. And then 4, 5, 6 days later, they start having symptoms, but they remind themselves, well, my exposure was 10 days ago. My test was 9 days ago, and now I have symptoms. It can't possibly be COVID. They can talk themselves into a condition where they would expose and make others unsafe. So again, I have really little use for these rapid tests with a very few exceptions. One would be you have significant symptoms that you believe are related to COVID. In that case, your pretest predictability is actually relatively higher. And then even though the test may have a lower sensitivity, it is at least as high as your pretest predictability there, in which case the benefit is you would have a positive test. However, I still say if you have symptoms and the test is negative, because we know it's not an ideally sensitive test, go with what you believe. Your symptoms should indicate to you you need to protect others, self-isolate, and seek a medical opportunity to obtain a higher sensitivity test, like a test that is utilizing PCR technology, polymerase chain reaction. Remember, the benefit of that is it takes whatever virus can be swabbed out of your nose, and it cooks it in a bath where the number of copies of that virus inside the test tube are multiplied by hundreds of thousands. When it does that, that PCR process magnifies whatever virus was obtained and makes it more likely to be a positive test, confirming what your symptoms already have told you. The worst application of the rapid test, however, is when someone has no symptoms and had a recent exposure. They're looking for a reason to not self-isolate or follow the recommendations of the CDC. And this is really an unfortunate and unwise use of that test.
You know what really scares me about that? Is that's pretty much the response from first responder employer community. You have all these people.
All employers.
I had an
employers are using it for this purpose.
All employers. Yes. I don't want to just single out my first responder family, but this really is kind of a first responder podcast. So, but yes, this does count for all humans. But many people are telling their employees, hey, go get a rapid test and get back to work. If you're asymptomatic, the rapid test doesn't apply. if you're symptomatic, you shouldn't be going to work anyway. So it's kind of a useless situation that's very confusing, especially when somebody calls into work and their boss says, well, get to work. Like, hang on, dude. This doesn't make any sense. So what do we do in those situations? You're saying just go get a PCR. So if my employer says, okay, go get a rapid, me personally, I'd also get a PCR just to make sure.
Yeah, I'd wait the number of days that makes a PCR much more likely to reflect the biologic status you're in. But I want to go up the stream a little bit from that, Jeff. And here's the truth. This is exactly why people still need to wear masks. And because what we have to do is not worry so much about an exposure and now I'm asymptomatic. And, you know, the point is don't get yourself exposed. Wear the masks and put them on the patient for the simple reason that that then obviates this whole discussion. Where I find it most unfortunate isn't even in our realm of EMS. I find it in workplace environments or, you know, schools or colleges. My children go to college. And one of my frustrations is in the state of Ohio, at least, they're relying on this to tell people it's okay to go back to class after a known exposure, which is our absolute recipe for getting a lot.
Wrong.
Yeah. It's just that you couldn't pick up a more unwise utilization of a test to falsely reassure a whole group of people that are not only likely to give it to each other, but maybe to their instructors, or if they go home on the weekend to their family members or an elderly parent or something. This is just really
set up for an outbreak.
Yeah. It's misguided, truly.
We are experiencing that right now in the school's athletics, where the state has been advocating use of these rapid antigen tests to get kids back to athletic activities. As you point out, it's a setup for an outbreak. I just want to follow up on Dr. McGraw's point of masks. So the other strong reason to continue wearing masks, even if you've been fully vaccinated, is that no matter what the variants pop up, no matter whether they're fully susceptible to somebody who's been vaccinated or not, masks are a preventive measure for all variants, all mutations. So continue to mask, continue to distance, continue good hand hygiene. Simple.
That's all for the show today, everyone. Thank you for listening, and thank you to Russ and Steve for coming on and spreading your knowledge. Your time and participation is always appreciated and never wasted. Again, the fellas did a great job of answering the questions that we've been receiving, but I'm sure you got more out there, so please keep emailing your questions, comments, feedback, and episode ideas to the EMS On Air podcast team by email at qi@ocmca.org. Also, check out our website, emsonair.com, for the latest information, podcast episodes, and other details. Follow us on Instagram at emsonair. And please, whatever podcast platform you use, subscribe to the podcast and leave us a rating and a review, because it really helps us to grow this thing. Thank you for listening to the EMS On Air podcast. Stay safe and have a great day.